Rangatiramaa, no maki te pai o te Waonui. A wrap of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jamie Tahana, aho. Coming up this week, unprecedented demand for kaupapa Māori mental health services, moves to protect Māori data as the government goes to the cloud, and recognition for a frontline Māori GP. But first, Ngāi Tahu will get guaranteed representation and decision-making powers on the Canterbury Regional Council. A bill ensuring two Ngāi Tahu members sit on the council passed its third reading in Parliament this week. The iwi and council say it's been a long time coming, but National is crying foul. RNZ political reporter Giles Dexter was at the final reading in Parliament.
Waiata ringing out across the house from the public gallery. More than 40 Ngāi Tahu representatives were at Parliament to celebrate the passing of a bill that cements places for their iwi on Canterbury Regional Council. The Ngāi Tahu representation bill means the iwi's runanga can appoint two members with full voting rights to the council. Te Tai Tonga MP Rino Tirikatane brought the bill to Parliament at the request of Ngāi Tahu and the council. He told Parliament the bill recognises Ngāi Tahu's mana and rangatiratanga.
Ngāi Tahu are entitled to this representation. They're entitled to this representation because that is the promise of the Treaty o Waitangi. And this is a modern day expression of that promise.
The council, known as Environment Canterbury, currently has two mana whenua experts, but they can only offer advice. Its chair, Jenny Huey, says the bill gives a voice to people who have been alienated from decision-making.
That's going to empower not only mana whenua, but all the councillors around the table in our community to make much better decisions at a time when, frankly, we're facing planetary overshoot on every criteria you want to name.
Te Pāti Māori co-leader Debbie Narewapaka says Ngāi Tahu has looked after the region through multiple crises and deserves representation.
Whether it be, you know, the COVID, whether we've had earthquakes, and I think that's the respect that should be shown. They are mana whenua, and that's how they deserve to be treated in this process. They will be one of the very first there for every crisis and for every clean-up and for every critical strategic decision that needs to be made, and that involves investment as well.
But National's Justice spokesperson Paul Goldsmith is furious, calling the bill anti-democratic. While the 14 councillors will be voted in or out at local election, the two Ngāi Tahu representatives won't be. Mr Goldsmith says that undermines the basic principles that all New Zealanders have equal voting rights and those who are elected are accountable at the ballot box.
That's a very big and fundamental thing to actually explain to New Zealanders why they think equal voting rights for all New Zealanders is no longer appropriate.
Ngāi Tahu's Liz Brown is disappointed but not surprised by National's rhetoric and says the two Ngāi Tahu councillors will have far more accountability.
As an iwi member and as a representative of iwi and of whānau, every single conversation that you have with a whānau member, you're held to account. You'll be asked, how did you vote? What perspectives are you bringing to it?
The legislation is unique and bespoke to Canterbury. But Labour MP Tamati Coffey has put out a pānui to other iwi.
Ngāi Tahu have opened the door. And for that reason, all of those iwi out there that are struggling with how representation works for them and their rohe, I hope that they're understanding that this is a potential pathway.
A pathway that could be rocky. National's already pledged to repeal the legislation if it takes power next year.
A kaupapa Māori mental health and addiction service is facing unprecedented demand as the pandemic and its side effects continue to bite. It has a new program and extra funding, but warns that is already being swallowed up as inequities persist. The Associate Health Minister has been travelling the country meeting with providers, but concedes much more needs to be done. I went out to Porirua to meet with one provider this week. Te Waka Whai Ora works the streets here, building relationships and resilience with whānau in a by Māori, for Māori way. After the past 2 years, pandemic, soaring cost of living, job uncertainty, one of their kaimahi, Charlie Kotika, says there's demand like never before.
The demand out there is huge for this. It's a matter of getting the kupu out there, getting the pānui out there, the tono.
Another kaimahe, Stan Hune, says they just don't have enough to help everyone who needs it. And it's a problem bearing out across the country.
We've unfortunately had to cap due to not having the capacity, would be able to, because there's not enough hours in the day, not enough days in the week.
Mr. Hune says they're proving particularly popular because of their taha Māori approach. It involves early intervention for whānau who are having trouble or have fallen into addiction, helping well before it becomes a clinical or criminal issue. It's about utilising te ao Māori because, he says, problems can often be caused by a lack of wairua, a lack of identity and a feeling of helplessness.
So what we've come to find out is that a lot of our whānau are victims of colonisation, so this program helps to enhance the knowledge and practice of te ao Māori for those who are interested, and then they get to discover other ways.
And it's services like this the government wants more of. The minister responsible for Māori health, Pini Henare, has been touring the country meeting with 29 kaupapa Māori providers who offer similar services. He says they're having great success and he's hailing the increased funding that's being rolled out.
The message is hugely positive. The ability and the opportunity to serve their communities is coming through strong and clear. Like I say, though, I think the uniqueness of these services across the country has really stood out for me. The foundation's the same, but the carvings in the house are different.
He says it's an example of the type of services funded and bolstered by the new Māori Health Authority, Te Aka Whai Ora. Mr. Henare spent yesterday at Ngāti Toa's Hongoweka Marae, hearing from on-the-ground providers like Te Waka Whai Ora. Its chief executive, Carol Koha, says all the new help's welcome, but it's already not enough. There's also trouble accessing full-time staff and managing levels of trust from the Wellington bureaucracy.
We have only been afforded 14 FTE to go across five providers. You know, we still talk about who most that need, where we say Māori and Pacifica is still the highest need, but the FTEs are being afforded to non-Māori, non-Pacific organisations. I don't know whether that is a trust issue. We'll leave it at that.
Pini Henare says a wero has clearly been laid before him.
That's obviously known to all of us. So we've got a job to do, and there's money that has been set aside in the budget to continue to support this workforce, and how do we strategise to grow it? So I welcome those challenges.
Challenges that need answers sooner rather than later. Did you know the FBI in the United States could access information you have stored in the cloud and you might never know it? This and a host of other reasons are driving a Māori bid to increase control over our own data by building cloud storage here, Phil Pennington reports.
The cloud. It really just consists of someone else's internet-enabled computers here and there where you can put data in and get help to work on it from anywhere in the world. The quid pro quo, most often someone else has access to your data. And if that cloud storage owner is American or Australian, they have specific laws that apply to it and that can give their agencies like law enforcement the ability to access it. Yet the trend is towards offshoring of more and more data, led by the government. And that trend is a major reason for a new report out from Professor Tahu Kukutai and the Te Kahui Raranga unit at the Data Iwi Leaders Group.
Agencies are rolling out all these different initiatives. Most of them are doing it without any adequate engagement. Instead of just making these unilateral decisions to offshore, not just only Māori data, but actually all New Zealanders' data, that actually Māori need to be involved in system-level decisions.
Years ago, the government was nervous enough about data misuse and loss of control, it set limits on cloud service use, then turned that on its head, including with 2016's Cloud First policy. But since the country lacked for major cloud providers, this meant offshoring. Lingering concerns were put to bed when the Privacy Commissioner decided to store their data in Australia with Microsoft in 2018. The implication since has been that offshore will always win out for security, cost and convenience. But Professor Kukatai's study challenges that, saying onshore locally owned can be very secure.
There actually needs to be strategic investment in a wider range of options. And taking a sort of intergenerational approach to data as a taonga means that we can actually start investing locally. That doesn't mean just putting our data in, you know, AWS in Sydney.
She's referring there to AWS, Amazon Web Services, which along with Microsoft dominate cloud services globally. Masses of New Zealand government data is with Amazon in Sydney, though the two US giants have pledged, with few details, to spend billions building cloud storage in this country. For the last 8 years, there has been a locally owned option, Catalyst Cloud, and it's just won government approval for public agencies to use it. Don Christie heads up its parent company, Catalyst IT. He has commercial reasons to speak up about the loss of cloud control, but it's also a fact due to the US and Australian laws. In Don Christie's experience, the government is not listening, despite other countries, especially in Europe, waking to the dangers and wanting to go local.
We often hear that there's a technical decision being made to choose an overseas service, and that it's above somebody's pay grade to consider the issues of data sovereignty and what happens to it. And so it seems to me that most people are just pushing it away as a topic that they don't want to have to think about.
The government is currently refreshing its Cloud First policy. The Data Iwi Leaders Group told RNZ it has had several meetings with officials who appear very eager to address the absence of titiriti te ao Māori and Māori data sovereignty in the existing policy. Meantime, entrepreneurs like Ben Taria are seeding microclouds of sovereignty, computers in people's cupboards they can connect to from anywhere in the world.
That's exactly what we see happening. We have iwi, hapu, whenua trusts, marae that have these computers hosted wherever, you know, could be at somebody's house. You know, I personally have my own pātaka or family cloud server running in a little closet in my lounge.
Ben Taria says the government may be doing great consultation over offshoring cloud services and other digital initiatives, but if so, Māori cannot see it. E ari ari mai o koutou tāringa ki te wao nui. You're listening to Te Wao Nui, a wrap of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. Ko Jamie Tahana tēnei. A Papakura GP and prominent Māori health leader has this week been given a significant recognition from her own peers. Dr. Mātere Harwood received a service medal from the Royal New Zealand College of GPs for services to Māori health during the pandemic. She only took 6 days off last year, working on the front line, but also with her many other roles supporting Māori health, as well as her research at Auckland University. Dr. Harwood spoke with Ashley McCall.
Genuine surprise and shock, and I still don't know to this day who nominated me for the award, but feeling very privileged. And it's beautiful to have your peers look at the work that you're doing, and it has been incredibly hard work. It was 12 months of only having 6 days off and working right through Christmas and New Year's and not being able to spend time with my family, you know, wanting to do the best that you could, not thinking that you're going to be rewarded for it in any way like this, but to get to the end of it and have your peers recognise you for that mahi is truly uplifting.
How have you found this winter trying to help whānau in your area?
Yeah, so it has been a real difficulty for us in South Auckland. It's been issues with more and more people becoming unwell and wanting to see a doctor quickly, especially if they've got underlying health conditions, but not having the staff available to do that in a timely and effective, efficient way, because we've also become unwell and have had to take time off for our families
families are unwell and we're having to stay home and look after them. So it's been incredibly difficult and challenging for all GPs around the country and for most of our hospital colleagues as well, because they've had to have their clinics overwhelmed with chronic illness, of people who've been sitting at home for a long time, not able to get in to see their GP who could usually manage things at home, but their health conditions have deteriorated, I guess. And then for the surgeons as well, who have had their surgical times, their theatre times cancelled because people can't get in. So those have been building up for them too. So, you know, it's just been across the health system, and I think we're probably at the very tip of that, trying to manage people's well-being in the community, but it's out across the system.
I want to move on to Andrew Little's announcement yesterday with plans to increase health workers, which includes Māori and Pacifica. He said there's no specific number, but do you think they need a clear target to aim for?
The key really is that we need some short-term solutions, so bringing people in to support the system I think would be really critical right now in this next month, 2 months, to give us some relief, I guess, and to know that the strategies, the policies that is going to be put in place, you know, we can actually see tangible outcomes from those. But we also need the medium and long-term solutions, which are going to be about increasing the number of people who are training in health careers. And for Māori and Pacific people, that means actually looking right back into high school, into colleges, and supporting them into those sciences and subjects that are going to get them into medical school, having a big enough pipeline to accept more and more people into health careers and health training. So I'd love to see more numbers available at our two medical schools and our nursing schools around the country. And then again, as we get more numbers coming through and graduating, attracting more doctors into general practice through the colleges.
So you've also mentioned how the healthcare workforce struggled over winter. So what supports needed to help Papakura Marae?
Looking back, I think some of the things that we could do to help people, like such as ourselves at Papakura, would be addressing some of those wider determinants for health and well-being. So looking at addressing poverty in our area, and I think that's going to start with, you know, living wage, improving opportunities for our kids to get into schools and further education after that. Those sorts of things are definitely going to help and take some of that strain off what we're seeing in our clinic. Improving support for mental health and addiction is also going to be critical in our area, because these are certainly, anecdotally anyway, I'm seeing more and more people in the clinic with these sorts of health issues. So having some support in those areas would be really useful.
That's Matere Harwood. It's 35 years since Parliament passed a law making te reo Māori an official language. The Māori Language Commission is this week celebrating the strides made since, but also warning that more work is needed. Ane te kairi puata a Ashley McCall.
From the stage... to the screen.
Kia ora I te wei, ko ka aines pana toko ingoe, haere aki nei,
tēnei. Ho mai, hoki mai ki te pūrongo o te pautūtanga, ko Mani Dunlop, tēnei. In our usual...
To the airwaves. Te reo Māori is all around us, and today marks 35 years since the Te Reo Māori Act came into law, enshrining the native language of this land as an official one. It followed years of campaigning, the Māori language petition, the land marches, and Ngā Tamatoa movements, to name a few. At the time, the state of the reo was in peril. Haru Williams, on an RNZ panel about the language bill broadcast in 1986, said it was crucial for the country that it survive.
We should never underestimate the emotive power of the Māori language. The danger of loss is irretrievable, and like the plague, the danger is contagious. Should we lose the Māori language in this country, both Māori and Pākehā will be the losers, and both will be guilty of allowing it to die.
35 years later, the chief executive of Te Tauira Whiri e Te Reo Māori, Ngāhiwi Apanui, is celebrating where the reo is at, but also taking stock. Demand for courses is through the roof, and about 30% of people consider themselves proficient in Te Reo Māori, but that still classifies it as endangered. And Mr. Apanui says the goal of 1 million reo speakers by 2040 is still a long way off.
They need 3,000 teachers today to satisfy demand for kids going into Māori medium. And for English medium, they need 30,000 teachers. So that kind of gives you an idea of the problem or the issue that we face. The good thing is there's unprecedented demand for te reo, but the issue is, what is the production line?
That's evident in the disparities faced by the very language nests that are meant to help the reo flourish. Kohanga and Kura Kaupapa were set up in the same wave that saw Parliament acknowledge te reo Māori. But since their inception, they've had to fight for funding, resources and acknowledgement. Tiru Nana Nui of Ngā Kura Kaupapa Chia Rāwiri Wright says if they were better resourced, successive governments would be closer to their own reo goals.
There were more than 800 kohanga reo. There are now 480 there or thereabouts. And if Kura Kaupapa Māori had been properly and equitably resourced, we currently have 6,500 students in Kura Kaupapa Māori, but there should be closer to 10,000.
Mr. Wright says teaching the language runs deeper than just understanding what's being spoken.
It's not just about te reo Māori. It's about mātauranga Māori, tikanga Māori, Māori worldview, Māori faith, belief, essence, and just being Māori.
Ngāhiwi Apanui says there are still inequities in access to the language, and mainstream schools are important to addressing that.
Not all Māori are in Māori medium, so to get te reo to those ones, and often it's socio-economically related. If you look through South Auckland, for instance, you won't find as many children coming out of families there speaking te reo Māori as you would if you looked at the middle-class Māori sector of society in Wellington.
35 years on, te reo Māori is the strongest it's been in generations, a long way from when tamariki faced corporal punishment for speaking their native tongue, a language whose use was officially discouraged until the late 1960s. But there's clearly much still to be done.
Nā te Waonui I tēnei wiki. That's te Waonui for this week. You can find all our Māori news stories on our website, rnz.co.nz, under the Te Ao Māori section. Thanks for joining us. Ko Jamie Tahana tēnei, noho ora mai, tēnā koutou katoa.